Sir Stephen, welcome. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much indeed. Nice to talk to you. I'm going to have to. What an honor that you were played by both David Jensen and Harrison Ford.
And I always have to tell
everybody says that to you, and I know it's very dull. But
my wife is fine. She's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, good. And I have two arms.
There you go. We're all doing well then. I love the book. It's such a wonderful reimagining. And
thank you.
What's great is you got these wonderful stories about heroism, honor, but all of it removed from the political climate. So I was wondering if writing about mythology allows you to say things that might be tougher to say in a piece set in contemporary times.
That is an extraordinarily acute question, and absolutely at the heart of it. And I didn't realize that until I'd finished this fourth book, The Odyssey. I'd written Mythos, which is the birth of the gods and the creation of mankind and their interactions and all those wonderful fables and legends and transformations. And then the story of the heroes, Hercules and Theseus and Perseus and Jason and so on. And then there's the Trojan War, and now the coming home of Odysseus and the other heroes. And it was only when I finished, I thought, I wonder why I was so happy writing these stories. And I realized that I didn't have to address the discourse, if I can call it that, you know, what you refer to, this, the cultural weeds that we get stuck in from time to time in the present day. We just can't help it. And I'm not, you know, making an anti-woke point or a pro-woke point. It's just a fact that if you write a story set in the present day, you kind of, it's necessary to show the point of view, the issues of race and gender and history of slavery and all the things that make up the modern world that we are now very interested in, either in avoiding or in addressing, but nonetheless are very present in our minds. When you do anything involving mythology, it's or legend, it's or indeed fantasy, I suppose. You can talk, as you say, about honor and, you know, hate, revenge, huge issues, massive human issues of love and primal qualities of humanity, but they're not dressed up in our modern clothes. You say, well, I don't like people like that because that's a kind of typical person from Brooklyn, or that's, oh yeah, God, we don't believe people who live in Hollywood, you know, or, oh God, that's a blue collar, resentful person. And, you know, everything sort of, you know, just in this ridiculous way is pegged into identity, whereas it's pure humanity in myth. Pure. I mean, that's why, to get very sort of high-end, it's why Wagner said his, and he wrote about it. He wrote exactly about this fact, why he wrote his dramas, or operas, as we often call them, in a mythical world as well, so that they would be timeless. It's because the stories are timeless. There is no real time to, we know it's in the past, but it's not a historical past that you have to be accurate about. And I think that's why there's been this huge passion for things like Game of Thrones and, mm-hmm. you know, the Tolkien, the Hobbits and the Return of the King and so on, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all of them, and all for different types of people and so on. And Greek myths is another kind and is actually underneath all of them. Tolkien was hugely influenced by the Odyssey. The Hobbit, there and back again. It's an Odyssey. It's a journey home. And so science fiction writers, you know, Star Trek and all these things are often about a journey home, Voyager in particular. And they allow us, as you say, to address pure human issues and all the juice and joy of what it is to be alive without having to explain what kind of dress they're wearing and what their political views are and what kind of car they drive. And that's, you know, that's really a great release. Maybe call it cowardice. I was happy to be lost in that world.
When did you first discover that you had a facility with words, that you could use the language to make people laugh, but also to make people think?
I was watching a film at home when I was about 11 or 12, and I had missed the beginning, and I didn't know what it was. It was amazing people dressed in fabulous clothes. It was set in the past. I wasn't quite sure when. It wasn't Shakespeare or it wasn't Jane Austen, but it was something. And there was one moment where a young man knelt in front of a girl and said, "I hope I shall not offend you if I say quite openly and frankly that you seem to me to be in every way the visible personification of absolute perfection." And it was as if I'd been sandbagged. I could not believe what I'd heard. I just thought, you know, language was something where you said, pass the mustard, where's the toilet? I hate you, go away. You know, it was just that. That's what most people used it for. But that it could be so poetic and so alive and so funny and so seductive. And so I ran to my mother and I said, Mummy, Mummy, I hope I shall not offend you if I state quite openly and frankly that you seem to me to be in every way the visible personification of absolute perfection. She said, what are you talking about? And I explained what I'd seen. She said, oh, that was The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. So I went and read everything by Oscar Wilde, and then I read, you know, other things. And I suddenly discovered that in reading, you saw language as paint, as dance, as music. And the thing that we just used to say, you know, whatever, you know, I want a pizza, shut the door, could be seductive, beguiling, poetic, and the very sound of the tip of the tongue hitting the teeth could be beautiful in the way that a cello or a guitar is beautiful. And that, especially because I wasn't given the gift of music and I wasn't athletic, so at school I was pretty much a nobody, but I discovered that language was a way out for me. It could help me get out of trouble, and I could amuse my friends, and I could play with words and learn new words and investigate language and just generally take a joy in the texture and the juice of our language. And I'm often sorry that more kids don't, because it's a gift we all have. You don't have to learn what an augmented seventh is, or buy special turpentine and linseed and you know, paintbrushes and things in order, as you do, to be an artist. Whereas to be an artist with words, you don't need anything at all. It's all ours. And you know, I think there are people around who still do. There are poets. There's Kendrick Lamar, or whoever you might choose, who people, Bob Dylan, obviously, in the past and still, I guess, in the present. I don't want to offend his popness. You know, we can all do it because we've all got the language. We just have to let ourselves go and fly with it, I think.
Well, the art is beautiful. The footnotes are great. And I work with high school students, and I think they would love this reimagining. Just a wonderful collection, Odyssey, the Greek Myths Reimagined. Stephen Fry, been a fan for a long, long time. Love the book, and so appreciate you making time for us today.
Thank you, Rich. I've really enjoyed it. Bless you.